It would be easy to start this sermon talking about cold-blooded academic facts and figures, like the fact that 1 in 10 Americans has an addiction issue. So we all do the normal thing, and I do the normal preacher thing, right? And I tell you, look around the room, count how many people are here. Let me do it an easier way. Hi, I'm Amy, and I'm a drug addict. It has been 26 years, 7 months, 28 days, 12 hours, 16 minutes since the last time I used cocaine. People don't like to do that. We all have an idea of what an addict looks like. We all have an idea of what that kind of person, that kind of a person. Addicts are doctors and ministers and lawyers. They're our brothers and our daughters. Some of us are addicted to drugs, some to alcohol, some to pornography, some to food. Some are addicted to more esoteric things, gambling, shopping. Some are just addicted to causing drama. There's all kinds of definitions of addiction. And that's one of the sad things, is that we really aren't sure exactly how to define it. And when I started putting this together, I was looking. Because addictions hurt. They hurt the addict, they hurt the community, they hurt the family. So surely we know what an addiction is, right? The American Society of Addiction Medicine managed to get together a short definition of addiction. This is the short definition, mind you. Addiction is a primary chronic disease of brain reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry. Dysfunction in these circuits leads to characteristic biological, psychological, social, and spiritual manifestation, which is reflected in an individual pathologically pursuing reward and/or relief by substance use and other behaviors. That's the short definition. And that's only about half of it. The long definition was 3.5 pages. And what it comes down to is, here's a lot of words that mean that we can't stay away from something, whatever our addiction is. We can't let go of it. But it doesn't give us any idea of how to decide when pursuit of that thing is pathological and when it's just a big hobby. Anybody in here, like, work with model trains? Anybody have model trains? Anybody a serious reader where you have books that reach almost the ceiling in your rooms? Got some of those? When does love of a thing become pathology? What are those hallmarks? Well, we don't know exactly. When it starts to damage your life, when the thing you love starts to impact your relationship with other people or your job. Alcoholics make up about 15.4 million Americans today. 4 million more use marijuana, and we're not sure if that's an addiction or a hobby. We don't know. We don't know how to distinguish between folks that like to go smoke a joint and relax and folks that can't stop buying the stuff because they can't cope with the world otherwise. We don't know. Other illegal drugs, about 7 million more people. Prescribed drug abusers, 2.4 million. It crosses racial boundaries. It crosses religious boundaries. And America seems to have the disease the worst. Bruce Alexander wrote an amazing treatise on addiction and American alienation. And he said this, because he looks at it not just as a disease. He said, global society is drowning in addiction to drug use and 1,000 other habits. It's because people around the world, rich and poor alike, are being torn from close ties to family and culture, traditional spirituality. So all the things that would have constituted normal life in pre-modern times. And he said, this kind of global society subjects people to unrelenting pressure toward individualism, competition, dislocating them from social life. And people adapt to this dislocation by concocting the best substitutes that they can for a sustaining social and cultural and spiritual wholeness. Addiction provides this substitute for more and more of us. History shows that addiction can be rare in society for centuries, but become nearly universal when circumstances change, when a cohesive tribal culture is crushed, or a civilization collapses. He said, this doesn't deny the individual's tendency toward addiction. We're not saying that addiction isn't a disease. But we're saying it's a disease where our society makes it even more prevalent, even more susceptible to that disease. When we lose all connection, we seek to find it in other ways. Medically and psychologically, it's a disease. Sociologically, it's about alienation. So where does religion come into this? Well, here's the thing. 12-step programs are a religious perspective. Like Christianity, like Judaism, like UUism, like Buddhism. They're a way of approaching spirituality, a way of approaching being in the world and living your values that work whether or not you have an addiction to drugs and alcohol. They let you approach the problems in your life in a systemic and meaningful way. So religion can be a part of how you survive the disease of addiction. It can help remove that crippling isolation. And 12-step spirituality may be the key to let you out of a cage you didn't even realize had gotten locked behind you. Or it can just be a vista forward if you don't have an addictive personality. It can be a way to systemically deal with issues. It can be a way to help someone you love deal with addiction issues. You heard a set of 12 steps in our first reading today, and I'm going to look at those from a UU perspective. It's a religious process to get over the current active addiction. Because you never get over being an addict. You're just an addict who isn't using today. But you know, that's good enough. That first step sounded pretty scary. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. Now you can replace the word alcohol with anything. You can be powerless over coffee, drinking, drugs, pornography, yarn collection. I had a friend who swore she was powerless over knitting. Looking at her yarn room, I agreed with her. The first step is about seeing there's a problem. But more than that, it's about reclaiming honesty. It's about realizing that while you may be dangling over your own personal hell, there's a break you can grab before you go any further. If nothing else, if everything in your life is a mess, you can take complete and utter control of saying, I don't have this. Hello, I am utterly screwed. When you have nothing else, just having one thing, even if it's saying, I don't have this, sometimes it's enough. It's the first ledge to get your toe on. You are part of an entire web, and some other part of that web, the alcohol or the drug or the yarn part of that web, has gotten wrapped around your throat. It matters too much to you, and your place in that web has been twisted and unstable. But you're still a part of a web, and you can untwist. It takes recognizing it. That second step, came to believe and accept we needed strength beyond our awareness and resources. Simple language, I'm not able to do this alone. I need community. We need community. We need something bigger and stronger, maybe collectively wiser. May not be a god or a goddess or something divine. Maybe just the people around us. We need to be seen and held by something that isn't us. Number three, made a decision to entrust our will and our lives to the care of the collective wisdom and resources of those who've gone before us. This one's simple. Don't reinvent the wheel when you're trying to solve your problems. You don't have to start from scratch. There are people who've gone before. There are prophetic words of prophetic people. Our principle, we listen for wisdom. This reminds us wisdom is out there. Listen for it. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. This is the part where you use the theology that you go to a UU church to come to understand. Once you've built your own theology, it's only then that you can decide where you've fallen short. Because if you don't know what you believe and you don't know what is right for you, how do you decide when you've screwed it up? Addiction takes away control, but as you decide where right is, where is the moral and ethical place you need to be, you get to take control. You get to decide how far from right you are. It hurts. But it hurts good. It hurts like ripping a bandage off. You've finally seen the actual damage. You made assessment of the mess, and there is no more other shoe. It's all right there. Step five, admitted to ourselves without reservation and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This is back to being honest. Being fully present in covenant with another human being. It's about recognizing when you've screwed something up beyond belief, there is one thing you can do. You can show up in all your brokenness. And you can trust at least one person to be with you in that brokenness. Whatever the issue is you're dealing with, whether it's drugs, alcohol, problems with your children, this step says to you, I'm not a pariah. I'm not alone. I can tell one other person, and when I'm done telling them, they're going to tell me, I still see you. I still like you. You're still you. For some of us, that's a revelation because we don't feel like us anymore at the point where we reach this step. Step six, we're ready to accept help in letting go of all of our defects of character. We're ready to return to community. We're ready to enter back into covenant. Part of letting go of that alienation is about re-entering into the give and take of relationship. It's about letting go of parts of your identity that you've clung to simply because they were yours, even though they weren't good for you. Step seven is the action piece to six. Once we've gotten ready to let go of it, seven is actually letting go of it. Eight, made a list of all persons we'd harm and became willing to make amends to them all. This is a marvelous step. When you make a mistake, when you've done something that you don't like, that makes you feel like not you, we're back to honesty here. It's about recognition that just like in UUism, it takes human hands to undo human errors. And this is about not putting the cart before the horse. I don't know about you all, but when I was little, there were times when I'd screw up and I'd whack my sister or I'd swat my brother. And my mother would grab me. And what do you think she said? Tell them you're sorry and you love them. I don't love them. I want to kick them again. And so I would stand there and say, I'm sorry. I love you. You could see the little snarl. I wasn't ready to say that to them. I was still angry. I was still in that argument. Step 8 says, you're ready to take the time to say, I'm sorry. You understand who you've hurt. You're going to take a breath and get ready. And 9 is the action step. Make direct amends when possible, except if it would injure someone. You're really ready to say, I'm sorry. You take a deep breath and you go and do that, unless it would hurt them more. You don't get to make yourself feel better at the expense of someone else. You don't get to say, I'm sorry, and think that makes it all good if they're terrified of the sight of you. The 10th step of a 12-step program says, continue to take personal inventory, and when you're wrong, admit it. This is great advice for any problem you face. If you've had a problem in an area, keep checking yourself out. Make sure the problem isn't back. 11, sought through meditation to improve our spiritual awareness and our understanding of the AA way of life and to discover the power to carry out that way of life. This calls you to mindfulness. It says that the way to do the rest is to get yourself centered. That this journey is for the rest of your life. And if you don't remain aware that you matter, that you can be better, you can't fight the disease of addiction, you can't remain in community, and you can't be free. But if you get yourself centered, if you use the program, the religious perspective to remain in community, you'll find the wings that let you fly without the substances. And number 12 is have a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps and practice the principles in all our affairs. Step 12 is just that call to live your faith. It's a call to covenant and community to teach and support others, because once you're not drowning anymore, it's your job to put on a life jacket and help to get others out. If addiction is part of your life, church can help you find comfort in community, because a 12-step spirituality works seamlessly with RUU values and principles. And if addiction is not part of your life, 12-step spirituality can be used to approach other problems. It's a way of living mindfully, akin to Buddhism. It's a set of approaches that can be used with almost any spiritual belief. So whatever is holding you prisoner, whatever's holding you back, you can fight it. 12 little steps, 12 giant steps. They're the distance across the kitchen, but they're also the distance between hell and hope for quite a few of us. 1 in 10. 1 in 10. And the 12-step programs work if you let them, one day at a time. You're only promising for today. You're only fixing the problem for today, one step at a time. Amen.